Welcome back to the Oscar Project Podcast, the show where I discuss Oscar-nominated films year by year. I'm your host, Jonathan Eichelberg, and today I sit down with Misan Harriman, director of the Oscar-nominated short film The After, currently available to stream on Netflix. Before I jump into the interview, please make sure to subscribe to the show in your podcast player so you can get all the newest episodes as soon as they're released. If you like the interview and want to hear more, please consider leaving a rating and review in Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Misan Harriman is the director of The After, a powerful and affecting story that follows a man who has to reconnect with himself and society after witnessing a devastating random attack. After its world premiere at the Oscar-qualifying Holly Shorts Film Festival, where it won Best Live Action Short, this incredibly thought-provoking short film is officially nominated for the 96th Academy Awards, and Misan is kind enough to join me today and talk about the film. Misan, welcome to the show.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for having me.
So first off, congratulations on a fantastic film and on your Oscar nomination. So what was your first reaction on hearing the news that you were nominated for an Oscar?
You know, we filmed it, and it's funny to rewatch because I actually was completely speechless. My wife was screaming and having a normal reaction. I was speechless. That, you know, it's probably a bit of a cliche, but I really was.
I can imagine. I think I would be too, especially with your first foray into film like this is.
Crazy. Yeah.
So talking a little bit about the film, you know, for folks who haven't seen it, it tells about this man, Deo, played by David Oyelowo, who suffers a terrible loss that completely upends his life. So where did that idea come from for this story? And why did you decide to make that your first foray into filmmaking?
I really wanted to look at grief and mental health, you know, because I like all of us, or most of us, had a pretty tricky 2020 with COVID and other things. And, you know, as the years went by, I realized that the repercussions of such a extraordinary year are upon all of us. So it's the first time really since possibly the Second World War that most of the known world had been flipped upside down, because you didn't, you know, in 2020 you didn't need to ask anyone, hey, how you doing, because you know they're like,
right,
not doing too good. And I thought, well, you know, let me, you know, suicide rates and chronic depression are off the scale right now. People are really struggling, and I certainly have been through the mill, as we say in England, with my own mental health challenges. So I wanted to make something to give us, the collective us, grace in our invisible wounds, and make people understand that it's okay to not be okay. And it's also a sign that you're a human being, that you're going through it. And having this short, you know, has such unimaginable loss was important for me, because I wanted the audience to then see how is this man going to bear this weight. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's really why I went down that road, per se.
Wonderful. And I think it's fantastic that you were able to get the lead actor that you did. I recently saw him in The Book of Clarence a few weeks ago and loved him in that film, and was happy to see him here in your film as well. And, you know, you're talking about that grief. I thought he did a fantastic job in that portrayal of grief. Like him, I lost a child, but in much different circumstances than in the film. So I just wonder, was there anything, you know, in your first kind of stepping into directing a film like this, how did you get him, or did he kind of do it on his own to portray that grief of that loss?
David lost his mother and father leading up to 2020, and he, you know, like many people, has been open about grief being something you live with. Mm-hmm. And I've said in other interviews, and I'll say it again now, I'm not sure what we have on the screen is acting. You know, I think he gave us something quite sacred, and I hope we deserve it. I really do. You know, he certainly did not need any direction from me. My job in that specific scene that you're talking about was to make sure the composition of this incredible expression of raw grief was captured in a way that the audience were forced not to look away, which
Right.
is why it's a, you know, it's a one shot, you know, steady cam. I know it was, and also, you know, when an actor gives that, you don't have multiple takes, you know. So
Right, right.
it was more knowing when you have the emotion on the screen, which with David in that specific scene, that was a given, and making sure we captured it in a way that was utterly immersive for the audience. And hopefully that's what you saw. Hopefully that's what you saw on the screen.
Yes, no, I was enthralled by that one shot that you're talking about. You know, I think it goes on for a minute and a half to 2 minutes at least. And just the seeing the young girl that he was, you know, her and her parents were in the rideshare previously. She comes over, gives him that hug, and then he reacts to that, and then her parents react to that, and it's just that complete breakdown that he goes through. But then I like the point that, you know, you kept it on him, and he's able to kind of say, you know, I've had my moment. Let me regroup here, and you know, as hard as it is, it's time to move on.
Yes.
So I thought that was really powerful too, that it's not just that breakdown, but we get that whole kind of process of going through that realization, like you said earlier, it is okay to not be okay, but still continue on.
Yeah, and you know, speaking for myself, when I have a and I you know I have anxiety attacks. I have moments where I do feel like my soul is leaking, whether it's tears or something else, right? And when it's all said and done, hope is still in the room, right?
Right.
And that's what we wanted to do. We wanted to make that scene and this film not have a Hollywood sort of happy ending, you know, but we wanted to know that this man, he's still here, and he's going to build himself back up brick by brick.
Yep, absolutely. And I think you definitely captured that in the film and in that final scene for sure.
Thank you.
Now, being your first time making a film, was there anything that surprised you about that process of kind of taking the story idea and turning it into something that we can now watch on screen and others can observe and participate in?
I'm an unapologetic nerd, so everything about filmmaking is just heaven for me. You know, the collaborative process of it, it's just amazing. So Dulani, our storyboard guy, just working with him was like, I was just like a kid in a candy store. You know, he's so talented, and he words and ideas that were coming, he was putting it on paper, and then we were just finessing it and building that out, working with Aguilar, our editor, and just finding the emotion that we needed in the, you know, in the 18 minutes that we had with this extraordinary talented woman was amazing. Working with our sound design guy, who was just weaving, conjuring so many amazing sounds that I needed as a director to really amplify all of the scenes that were heightened. So all of it, the stunt workers, the extras, the of course our amazing DOP, Cy Bell, who you'll know from Peaky Blinders. We shot this on a large format camera, which is crazy for a short, but it allowed us to shoot
Right.
we wanted to, and it was just incredible, absolutely incredible. So for me, the difference between photography and filmmaking is, for me, photography can be a journey of solitude, which I love. It's me and the camera, and I go out and I do my thing. Filmmaking is utterly collaborative, and I have even more respect for all of the people it takes to make a picture. And I felt this is where I'm supposed to be. You know, really, really loved it.
Fantastic. Well, before we move on to a couple of questions that aren't necessarily related to the film, is there anything else you want to touch on about the film specifically?
No, I mean, I'm thankful that it was on Netflix, because obviously I think there's 230 million subscribers on Netflix. So to do a film that is this raw, that can reach this many people, I think is a real win. And I'm being as frank as I can be. That is a win for me, because I'm getting, you know, grandmothers in South America, and young men and women in Australia send me letters, emails, everything, you know, DMs on what this film did for them. And that is something that I'll never get over, how this is reaching people from all walks of life, religions, race, whatever. It's talking to them in a way that I can barely comprehend. So that's something that my team and I are incredibly proud of.
Wonderful. So I know you mentioned, working primarily as a photographer before making the film, with some high profile folks, of course. But you also have a strong focus on some activism, from diversity and inclusion to mental health, like you mentioned earlier. How have you been able to use your photography or the film, obviously, as well, to support some of these other causes and what you want to do?
You know, I was giving a talk at a university, not long, a graduating class at university, and I said this, and you know, to the graduating class, whatever you do in your personal and your professional life, whatever the future is going to throw at you, make sure that you build bridges. Make sure that you find a way to build bridges. And I hope work does that. And it can be a bridge within just you singularly, or it can be a bridge between the many chasms we have in the human story as we live today. And that can be poetry, it can be me speaking about things and fighting for single dads and single mums, fighting for the gay and trans community, fighting for climate action and climate change, you know, and of course, you know, racism, with all of the peaks and troughs of that journey. And I think that's a thread which I am in with real intention going to bring into any aspect of my life. I don't even really think about it. It's kind of already there. And this film, for example, is about people that are really being crushed by mental health and grief and anxiety and depression, you know, and hopefully it would speak to them in that way that when film is done right, you translate it in your own language, you know.
Sure. And I read also that you've completely self-taught when it comes to photography. What is it specifically about photography that kind of makes you come alive, that really lights you up?
Well, between the highlights and the shadows is the human story, you know. Robert Frank said, you know, the eye must learn to listen before it looks, right? When an image is right, it stops you in your tracks in the way few things on this earth can. And it's my sword and my shield and how I move through life. I will always have a camera on me, whatever happens, you know. It's such a seemingly inanimate object that can change your world, you know. So that's always been my attraction to imagery. And of course, filmmaking is an extension of that as well, but the still image has
Right.
a very special place in my heart.
Excellent. I really like that way of putting it. Now I know this will probably be a hard question, but I try and ask all my guests, if you could only name top three films, what do you think they would be?
Of all time?
Well, all time of the last year, whatever breakdown you want to put on it.
Oh my
That's
God.
why it's the hardest question.
Three off the top of my head. Timbuktu is a masterpiece. If you haven't seen it, you must. Barry Lyndon and Cinema Paradiso. Timbuktu, Barry
Right,
Lyndon. So yeah, definitely.
good choices. And then in a similar vein, but a little bit more of a fun question, if you could invite three movie characters to your next dinner party, who would you be and why, or who would they be and why?
So that not the actors, the actual characters.
The actual characters, yep.
Oh, that's a cool question. Alfredo, in Cinema Paradiso, the old man that ran. I don't know if you've seen the film, but the old man that mentors, that runs a local cinema. I would love to spend my whole life with somebody like that. So Alfredo in Cinema Paradiso, Furious in F Furious Styles in Boys in the Hood, so played by
Okay.
Larry, You know, Larry now Lawrence. Initially, it was called Larry Lawrence Fishburne. The incredibly educated father of Cuba Gooding Jr.'s Trey Styles character, and yeah, the kind of father figure everyone wanted. You know, as a black man, you know, to see a dad that would. There's a great scene where he's by a billboard and he teaches a whole bunch of kids in the hood about gentrification. You know, it's one of those great cinematic scenes, and I just
Right.
love that character, Furious Styles, from Boys in the Hood. Third one. I'm like looking around my office. Third one. Third one would be now this will throw you. I bet you no one's going to
Okay.
say that. Third one would be, I don't know her name, but I think legend called her Mama Montana. So the mother of Tony Montana in Scarface. And
Okay.
I love this character. So she passed away, the actress Miriam Colon, in 2015, I think. And she only had, as you know, very few scenes, but you know, that famous scene where you know Tony's arrives with a big suit and he offers his sister money and she just dresses him down. She's like, who have you killed to take this money? I will not, you know, take your blood. And like again, the kind of mother that everyone needs, right? And
Right, yeah.
how she, you know, she's probably the only person in the whole of Scarface that Tony sits the fuck down and actually
Yep.
turns into the boy that he actually really is anyway. So yeah, Tony Montana's mother would be someone. Oh, that would be one hell of a dinner to have those three together. But yeah, those are my three.
Absolutely. I want an invite if you can set that up. And lastly, before we wrap things up here, I'm sure you're plenty busy with the promotion on the film leading up to the Oscars, but what do you have next going, and where can people follow you on social media to get any updates for what you're
Yeah, I
working
mean,
on next?
Instagram's probably the best, which is just my name, Miss Anne Harriman, on Instagram. And I think, to be honest, the next thing is to try and just get my head around Oscar season. And I've never anything like this in my life, so I'm heading off to LA pretty soon. And I'm going to just try and enjoy it and be in the moment as much as I can possibly be. I'm reading a lot of scripts at the moment and developing a few ideas of my own, and you know, hoping to work with people like David and my amazing producer Nikki Bentham again, and we'll see what fate throws at us. But I hope I will be able to do more in this industry.
That's fantastic. I hope so as well, because if this is any indication what we can expect from you, I think whatever else is next is going to be just as good.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that.
Well, Ms. An, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me today. I really enjoyed speaking with you, and of course, best of luck at the Oscars next month.
Thank you, sir. I'm going to need it. Thank you.
Thank you again to my guest today, Ms. An Harriman. His short film, The After, is streaming on Netflix and is nominated for Best Live Action Short Film at the 96th Academy Awards. The Oscar Project Podcast is written and produced by me, Jonathan Eichelberg, with editing assistance from Joshua Eichelberg. Please join me next time where I return to an author interview after a few weeks off. Until then, I hope to see you at the movies.